Next up, number 801, April 25th. That's a tough date, 2025.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you again to another episode of the Next Step Podcast with Father Vazgen. With these podcasts, Father Vazgen provides a very distinct and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course, the neophyte. Those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. So we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
You know, I miss that song, and it makes me think, like, we got to make new use out of that song. It's been the theme of the next step, but it really needs to have a place in Apostle, you know? It's like, should be like a theme song for a lot of our podcasts, maybe even the daily messages, you know? I got to rethink that. It's beautiful. And my son Bonarjan did that. Must have been about 14, 15 years ago. It was after a couple years that we were using No Step by Tull as our intro. And then we started using Caliandrin Shade too. But then one day he just created that. Just a beautiful song. It is the Next Step song. Anyway, welcome. Welcome to another edition of The Next Step. We've got so much to talk about as so much time goes by between our Next Step shows. But I want to talk about where we are today. I want to talk about Pope Francis's passing just a few days ago on Easter Monday, what they call for us in Armenian Church. We call it Merelots, the following any of the five major feast days. It is a day that is specifically to remember those who have passed. And also I want to talk about something that probably has gone under the radar, but needs to be, we need to put our attention on it, and that is the 1700th anniversary of the Council of Nicaea. And you say, well, what's the big deal? Well, you know what's the big deal about that? Was last Sunday was Easter. And one of the things that the Council of Nicaea did was decide on the date of Easter. And it's really one of the problems within the unity, the discussion for unity within the church. There are many, many, many people who have issues with when Easter should be celebrated. I mean, for me, you know, I go on record. I mean, we should celebrate Easter every day. But you know what I mean. I mean, people want to celebrate in different ways. They want to have their Easter eggs. They want to have the Easter bunny come. And they also want to have nice little services. But most importantly, they want to be united on the world front. I mean, can you imagine the celebration of the Christian church is celebrated on different days? Now, there is a formula that they came up with. It's the first Sunday after the full moon of spring. So that is the vernal equinox, right? The other one is the autumnal equinox. This is the vernal equinox we just went through about a month ago, right? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Actually, it was on the day that we left for Armenia that I think we had a full moon. It was March 22nd. If it wasn't, yeah, the day we left for Armenia on the 22nd was the full moon, because I remember seeing it outside, or it was getting close to it, something like that. And we kind of figured out that, okay, this is why Easter's way out in April, because we had the full moon. The equinox had just taken place. Anyway, whatever the calculation, whatever it might have been, right now the bottom line is that the Christian churches celebrate at different times. And there's the question of the Julian and Gregorian calendars. These are issues too. But what I wanted to say is that last Sunday, April 20th, was a time when both Eastern Orthodox and the West celebrated. Now, this is kind of unusual when I say this, because when you think of Eastern Orthodox and you think of Roman Catholic Church, that is basically East and West. But you don't think about Roman Catholic and Protestant being on the same line. But in celebrating Easter, yes, the Western churches, Roman Catholic Church, as well as the Protestants, all celebrate on the same day, Easter. So do we, as Armenian Church. Our date was changed in 1923, believe it or not. We used to be on the old calendar, but for some reason, the Easter got changed. And I want to believe that I know why Christmas didn't get changed. But Easter got changed, and we celebrate with the West. And of course, like I said, you know, for my formula, that's fine. We need to celebrate Easter all the time. It is resurrection time. A Christian is a celebrant of the resurrection. To me, even the Sundays, you know, I spoke at the Adventist church a couple years ago. Seventh-day Adventist, they called me in to talk about a few issues, and I was talking, and then at the end, somebody tried to put me on the spot, and they said, how come you guys don't celebrate the Sabbath, and you have your services on Sunday? Well, two different things. Sunday is not the Sabbath. Sunday is Resurrection Day. It's the day of resurrection. That's why we celebrate on Sunday. Actually, in Armenian, Shabbat, that's direct translation of the Sabbath, is Saturday. The word for Saturday is Shabbat, Sabbath. So we have our Sabbath, but we do have the Resurrection Day, which is on that Sunday, and that's why we get together on Sundays. But that's another issue. That's the Easter issue. I do want to start off with today. April 25th happens to be the hardest day out of the entire year to be an Armenian. Yeah, it's the hardest day. I've said this many times, because yesterday was April 24th. It was the 110th anniversary of the Armenian genocide. And, you know, my grandparents on both sides were genocide survivors. I grew up with those stories. I grew up the gruesome details. I did my master's thesis about the Armenian genocide, about the problem of evil. I've been sort of a consultant on genocide issues. And back in 2006, I traveled to Rwanda with a small group of educators from USC, where we were able to meet with genocide survivors. And I did it for the sole reason that, hey, I wasn't around in 1925 to find out what it was like a decade after the genocide. So I went to Rwanda a decade after their genocide to see what I'd find out. And, you know, the stories were identical, everything about them. And I share this story over and over, and I had a chance to share it the other day at the school. And I was at John Burroughs High School. I love going to the high schools. You know why I like them? Because they're fresh. They're willing to listen. They don't know everything. So when you tell them about genocide and you tell them that, oh, wait a minute, you know, this is not a war, you've got their attention all of a sudden. It's a big thing. It's not a war. We have enough wars all over. Genocide means that the government has decided that a group of people are not allowed to live. And not only have they decided, but it becomes the law to murder those people, to kill those people. And in other words, if you don't kill those people, then you are in violation of the law. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King said it beautifully once. He says, we must never forget that everything Hitler did in Germany was legal. Yeah, those gas chambers, killing the Jews, those were legal acts within Germany. It wasn't like he was saying, hey, folks, you know, I'm gonna see if I could get away. No, it was the law. And same thing in the Armenian genocide when the Minister of the Interior, Taylat, issued the order. It was anyone who disobeys this order to kill Armenians can no longer function within the government. There you go. You kill the Armenians, otherwise you lose your position, your job. So that's a big difference between what acts of war where they get up and they kill people. Both of them disgusting, but you get the idea. And so when I speak at, especially at high schools, they just listen, they perk up because you see so much of it going on in the world right now. People talking about and saying things against others. And, you know, it's very easy to draw some lines from what's going on in the world to what can happen. Now, why do I say that April 25th, today, happens to be a tough day to be an Armenian is because, well, the easiest thing is April 24th. Because there's so many people that want to get up and tell you that their wounds are open. Oh, my wounds are open! Last night, I took my grandkids, my wife and I, we took our grandkids over to the Montebello Monument. And this is a very special space for me because my father was one of the members of the committee that built that monument. And I'm incredibly proud that his name is on a plaque within that monument. And it's the first and I believe the only monument dedicated to the Armenian genocide that is on public land. And just about a month or 2 months ago, it was officially dedicated as a California, what was it? I think it's called landmark. It has California landmark status, which basically takes it off of the roles of the city, which is the city of Montebello, and it becomes a structure that is taken care of by the state of California. This is a pretty big deal, pretty big deal. And we were there, and Archbishop asked me to give the opening prayer for that day because considering that I was there when it first opened back in 1968. And I remember as a child, my father going to meetings and orchestrating it, and along the way, the groundbreaking, the fundraising activities, all of those things were very, very real in my life. And here it is. We were there last night with my grandkids. And so basically, you know, generations now. And, you know, I looked around. There's a few hundred people. Throughout the day, there's people that come and go. They lay flowers at the monument on April 24th. And I know that there was some activity in the morning with a delegation. And I was, like I said, I was speaking at the school, and then I spoke at one of the hospitals over here. So I was unable to go during the day. But I went in the evening, took our grandkids, and that was very special. Still, there was maybe, I would say, in the hour that we were there, I'd say a few hundred people that walked through, placed their flowers, offered some incense, and then moved past it. And, you know, it's a meditative spot. It's a place to stand, to reflect, to be reflective. And in those 200-300 people, and myself as a priest of the church who serves in this area, I could tell you that I did not know one person, which is telling you that the community is moving, that there is a new community, that there are people coming, and it is being enjoyed by many, many different people. And that's an important point, that it's not just something that took place, but it is a monument that serves a purpose right now, today. It wasn't just a monument that was put up there and people forgot about it. You see enough of those. If you do some driving, especially here in the United States, they have these official monument markers where you could stop and you could read the story about what is that that green monument that you see there. It's green either because it's bronze and it's gone green, or because there's just ivy and grass growing and algae growing on that monument. because it hasn't been cared for. But it's good to know that after 60 years since that monument in Montebello was constructed, that there's a new group of people. There are new groups of people that are going there and offering their prayer, offering their flowers, their incense in memory of those who passed. And like I said, April 24th, easy day to be Armenian. Today's the difficult one because it's all over. And now what do you do with all those good feelings that you had yesterday? And I guess that's what I want to talk to you about, because I've got to admit, I was incredibly frustrated over the last few days. Frustrated because the things that we had put into motion, you know, there's a saying that if you take two steps forward and you go one step back, it's okay because you're still moving forward. I felt like this year we really took many steps backwards. And you know what? I thank you as my listeners, and I'm just very thankful that the next step is a document of our last 20 years, our last whatever it is, 17, 18 years, that we went through this very, very special time as a group, in his shoes, walking in the shoes. We gave an alternative to what we can do with the feelings that we have with genocide. Last night, as I'm standing there at the monument, I see this, there was three young ladies walking around with these horrid shirts of like people, just blood spilling on the shirt. You know, they're t-shirts, not real blood. T-shirts with logos and designs on it of blood and veins. And it says, "Our wounds are still open." And you look at them and, you know, with especially when they went towards their cars, which let's just say they, you know, they were upward of 100,000, you know. Let's say they could put a nice down payment on somebody's living quarters. And you look at them and you say, what wounds are open? You have wounds? And obviously they're alluding to the fact that, yeah, Turkey hasn't recognized that. But you can't say your wounds aren't open, because they are. They aren't. They're closed. You're okay. But now what do you do with that? What do you do with the fact that this genocide took place 110 years? And so we've put out a small little manual, so to speak. We've put ourselves out there that the only way that genocide of 1915 will become relevant in our lives is when we work towards ending genocide today. I have a beautiful picture that comes to me every April 24th. It's, you know, with these photo apps, they play things that they give you memories of the day. In April 24th, it's with a Darfuri man, and him and I are standing. I remember where we took it. We were on Wilshire Boulevard at the Federal Building in a protest, and there was a Darfuri man wearing a T-shirt that said, "It's better to stop a genocide than to mourn. Or rather than mourn a genocide, how about stopping one?" Something like this. But it brings the point home very clearly. Like, okay, you can mourn it all you want, but it doesn't get you anything. How about stopping what's going on right now? And we have, you know, in 2003, when we got together and we created In His Shoes, it came about because we realized that we were running a youth group. I had 200 kids coming every Friday night for our youth group at our church. And they would get together and we'd talk about things. And one of the beautiful things that came out of that was that they came up with this formula of, let's walk in the shoes of others. In other words, it's not enough to just say, hey, we went through this horrible time. There's people who are going through those horrible times right now. There are people who are victims of genocide right now. And why aren't we talking about it? And so we did that, you know, for the last 20 years, since 2003. We've been doing that, whether it's raising money or getting petitions signed or making movies and everything. Let's talk about others' genocides. And this year, I just felt like we lost. We lost all that traction for the two steps we took forward, we took maybe about three or four, five or six, seven or eight steps backwards, because it was silent. Last year when I spoke with the USC and UCLA kids out at on the UCLA campus, I remember going with a small entourage from Epostle, and we were together recording that. And I even challenged the students. Now, these are university students. You would expect a little bit more. And, you know, there was things going on right now. There was demonstrations against Israel and their treatment of the Palestinians right on their campus. And I got up and I spoke. I said, okay, we as Armenians, we went through a genocide. We need to talk about these, not because they're political issues, but because they're humanitarian issues. See, this is what's become, this is what we've come down to right now. If you talk about these things, they quickly get politicized instead of, let's focus on the humanitarian angle of this. The minute you talk about that, the Israel, what they're doing to the Palestinians today here in America, yeah, land of the free and open dialogue and First Amendment rights to say what you want to, you're shut down. Because you're called an anti-Semite, anti-Semitic. I'll tell you, there's nothing about me that's anti-Semitic. My life is out there on a book, put it there. I don't have hatred towards anybody. But when I see what's going on to the Palestinians, is that wrong for me to say that Israel is wrong? And you know what they'll throw at me? They'll say, well, the Palestinians started it. Yes. And that's why I'm so thankful that these podcasts are available, because they are nothing more than a record. I'm on record to say that, yes, we have to stop fire with a hose. We have to stop fire with water, not with more fire. You don't fight fire with fire. You know, Jesus said, you have heard it said that a tooth for a tooth and an eye for an eye. He was quoting a old law, the Old Testament law. He says, but I tell you, forgive your enemies. And I make a point of saying that, okay, what is he quoting? When he says eye for eye, tooth for tooth, he's talking about a maximum. If somebody's taken out your tooth, you have a right to take one tooth out. Somebody's taken out your eye, you have a right to take one eye out. Not two eyes, not five teeth. And right now we're upward of 50,000 Palestinians dead because Israel decided that they're going to wipe out the Hamas. And very conveniently labeling people as Hamas. Not people, but we're getting rid of Hamas. When I was in Rwanda, and there was the Tutsis and the Hutus that were fighting, and they made a point of calling, I forgot which one which, but the enemy labeled them as cockroaches. And if you look at the eight stages of genocide, one of the stages is dehumanizing the person. Yeah, if you refer to them as cockroach, then what do you do with cockroach? You exterminate them. You get rid of them. You call in an exterminator to do away with them. They're rats. They're subhuman. Get rid of them. You see how powerful that language is. If you refer to them as cockroaches, yeah, you step on them. Kill them. There's no reason to keep them alive. But they're not cockroaches. They're people. They're not Hamas. They're people. They're children. They're grandmas. They're grandpas. They're somebody's child. Even the guy holding a gun is somebody's child. And we've got to come up with better ways of dealing with these things. And it behooves the human race to do this right at this point. But we can't when there's no dialogue. When we are unable to talk about it. And this is what is so precious to me. That we have this opportunity to exchange ideas. And can we do that with respect and with the goal of bringing about peace? And so I sat through to this year, the Armenian commemoration, 110th anniversary. And I sat through and I sat through and I sat through, just like last year. At UCLA, USC, I got up and I said, hey, we've got to be talking about what's going on to the Palestinians. And you could hear the crickets because nobody wanted to deal with that. And as soon as I finished, someone else got up and they started talking. Yeah, well, we've had so many losses and our Armenian people are losing. They don't want to talk about other people. And this year, I saw it even more. When given the opportunity to make some noise, nobody wants to make that noise. I did it at the high school the other day. I did it at the hospital where I spoke. I do it through my podcasts. I do it through our messaging. But it's not enough. And I really felt frustrated this year because I did feel like we went backward. We sat there through services, through speeches, and it's about what was the Armenian plight, the plight of the Armenians. Woe to the Armenians, for we've been through so much. Without any connection, without any one connection to say, hey, you know, there's something going on right now in the world. And I'm not saying you need to focus in only on the Palestinians. There's stuff going on in Africa today, but nobody talks about that. Whether it's in Sudan, in Darfur, in Ethiopia, there are killings taking place because one group decides that they could control another group. And we need to get past that. How do you get past that? Well, we need to start talking about it. And we're not. We're scared to talk about it. The other day, a friend of mine sent me a clip from Peter, Paul, and Mary, 60s, 1960s folk singers, about how they were singing for peace demonstrations. And he said, we don't have anybody singing for this. And, you know, it's so true. It's so true. It's not about folk singing, but you listen. You know, we watched the Grammys about a month or two ago. I maybe made it through one song at the most. I couldn't take it. It's like self-serving noise. At what point do you say stop? Let's start thinking about what's going on in the world. It's not all about us. It's not all about our pleasure. This morning in the news about the Pope, the final arrangements being made for him, and of course, what's going on with our economy, with the stock market, and all the different difficult things that are going on. They found enough time and gave it a disproportionate amount of time to talk about the draft picks from the NFL, which quarterback is going to make, you know, $15 million passing a ball from one goalpost to the other, and so on and so on. You hear the excitement in the newscasters' voices. Well, yeah, it is exciting, but it is not on the same level as these human catastrophes that are happening. And what are we doing about these? What are we doing as people to be addressing these things? To say that these people's lives are important, as are all lives. Let's take a break right now. Okay, it's time. Yeah, wow. We're hitting the half an hour mark. Jeez. Sorry about that. Let's take a break, okay? We do every time. Just give us a little time to digest. And here's some music. I'm going to play something from the old school, okay? This is Araxia Gulzadian. She was a singer. I'll tell you about it after you hear it, okay? Let's go back in time, okay? This is 1960s, 70s. Araxia Gulzadian. Mas eru el de mes Araxi Gulzadian. Beautiful, beautiful music. This is from 1960s, okay? Actually, in 1960, she was selected as the People's Artist of Armenia. Yeah, there you go. She passed away in 1980. Let's see, do I have some details on her? She was born 1907. This is what's called, she's called a canonical singer. And this is like mostly Ashul music. Ashul would be minstrel. Minstrel. And, you know, it's kind of unusual to hear it from, you know, Nuna made it popular recently, but this is like old school, and I wanted you to hear it. It's unusual to hear a woman do it, do the Ashul songs in this genre of songs in the manner that she does. I just love it. And, you know, for a week like this week where we're remembering the genocide, we're remembering being Armenian, and I told you, it's tough on the 25th to stay Armenian. This is what kept people Armenian. You know, despite the, after the genocide, we had 70 years of communism. And today I was at a seminar, a webinar, actually, on Catholicos Sahag. Yeah, it was, I believe it was at UCLA. Yeah, it must have been because the Promise Institute was there too, yeah. I watched it online. It was just fascinating because it's the church that kept us, you know, it acted as a state. You know, when we're going to talk about the Pope right now, you know, the Pope is the head of a state too. And in many ways, we in the Armenian church, during periods of time where we didn't have state, it became the church that led the people. And today's music, I just wanted to share this with you. We're going to talk about the Pope in just a minute, but this was a way to kind of like, what we do is we play a song of the day every time we do a next step, just to give us a little bit of time to get through some of the heavy stuff and digest it as we get ready for the second portion of today's show. And we're right there, right now. Well, we celebrated Easter last week. Christ is risen. Christos Hariavi Merelots. Isn't it interesting that that is the official greeting of Holiest Easter for the Armenians? Armenian Church had made that popular, that that's how you greet one another at Easter. Not with a happy Easter, but Christ has risen. And that resurrection is central to our faith within the Armenian Church, as it should be for the rest of the Christian Church as well. And this is why it's disturbing to me when I talk about what's going on in the Armenian Church and their reference to the genocide as something negative, rather than focusing in on this idea that we are alive, and because we are alive, we have an obligation to others. And those others have to be beyond us. The other day, somebody came and said, well, it's too bad what's going on with the Armenians. And why does this keep happening to us? Well, it's because we never get out of the mold. It's like Einstein's reference to insanity. It's doing the same thing and expecting some different result. And instead of like worrying about yourself, worry about others. Think about others. It's basically Christianity, right? And we had the ultimate example of that last Thursday. Throughout all of Christendom was read the story of the Last Supper. In the Armenian Church, that Last Supper comes alive when the priest kneels down and he washes the feet of the servers in reference to what was written in John 13. That Jesus took off his vestments, he took off his cloak, and he got down on his knees and he wiped and cleaned the feet of the disciples. not clean feet by any means. These were feet that were walking around in sandals. And Nerses Shnorhali says it so beautifully. The same hands that had taken the earth and created man were now wiping that earth, that dirt off of these hands. In other words, this was God. These were divine hands cleaning in the act of humility to teach us that example. And when we talk about that example today, I can think of no other person who best emulates the Lord than Pope Francis. And he is now of blessed memory. He passed away the day after Easter, which they called Easter Monday. To us, it's called Merelots. It's the day that we remember those who have passed away. But in whatever you call it, for us, it's a day to also honor those people who have passed. And certainly, Pope Francis is somebody that we all need to honor. Now, I know, you know, people go, they said, well, you know, he sat down with the Azeris and everything. You know, you got to remember that, wait, we don't have too much to say because we never really did anything beyond ourselves, right? I think it's despicable what the Azeris did. I think it's despicable what Israel is doing. I think it's despicable any place that war or genocide sticks up its ugly head. It's all despicable. But when Pope Francis gives us an example, it's through his life. It's through his action, not just because of his words. You know, there's a saying that says a picture is worth a thousand words. You know, there's one picture that you can't get out of your head. When Pope Francis became Pope, all of a sudden we got to see a different side to the Catholic Church, that humble side. And we found out that Pope Francis, as a bishop in Argentina, never wanted any one of his parishioners to feel that he was above them. He would ride the bus, for instance, from place to place, as the bishop, as the cardinal. And on Holy Thursday, he would go and he'd wash the feet of prisoners. And if there's a picture that's worth a thousand, I'll tell you there's a picture that's worth a million words. It's when he knelt down after he washed the feet of the prisoners and he kissed his feet. I don't know. I can't fathom it. It's exactly the Christ message, right? Humble yourself. Humble yourself. You know, there are a few people in the world that have this title, His Holiness. One is the Pope, one is the Catholicos, one is the Dalai Lama. There's maybe a handful of people, His Holiness, their Holiness. Pope Francis has, there's several titles that are used. He's actually called the Vicar of Jesus Christ, the successor of the Prince of the Apostles, namely St. Peter is referred to as the Prince of the Apostles. Of course, the Bishop of Rome, the Supreme Pontiff of the Universal Church, Archbishop and Metropolitan of the Roman Province, the Sovereign of the Vatican City State, Servant of the Servants of God. And, you know, His Holiness kind of encompasses all of that, right? He's holy, right? And yet, on his tomb, he wants written one word, Francis. I've shared this with you in the past. We have a whole selection of names. We got together with some Catholic and different denominations the other day. And, you know, there's all kinds of titles that we have. We have His Eminence, His Grace, His Beatitude, His Holiness, we said that already, and Right Reverend, Reverend Father, the Very Reverend, not Reverend, but the Very Reverend. And we got all kinds of things. In Armenian, there's a fun one that I always like, Kerabaidzad. It means like super bright, Kerabaidzad. The Armenian Catholics use that one. Anyway, there's a bunch of titles, and you have to wonder, like, and what is Jesus' title? He was just called Jesus. And we have the audacity to call him just Jesus, right? Our Father who art in heaven. He tells us to talk about our Father. That's it. Our Father was in heaven. Okay. And then, but we stack up all these titles, all these different titles. And when you think about humility, I think about Pope Francis. Pope Francis was really, really a poster child for that humility that Jesus wanted us to learn. He did a lot of things to move the Roman Catholic Church. I've been listening to several commentators over the last few days since his passing, been talking about different things. Did he do enough? Did he do the right things? Was that okay and everything? You know what? Everybody takes these small steps, and if as long as you can stay clean to your conscience, you're okay, right? Everyone tries the best they can to make a difference in this world, especially in these positions. And he certainly did. He got us to talk about things beyond ourselves. And so when people come up to me and they say, well, you know, Pope Francis sat with the president of Azerbaijan. And my question is that, and when we as Armenians saw what's going on in Gaza, did we say anything? When we saw what was going on in Darfur, did we say anything? I'm not saying send over money. I'm just saying, did we say anything? All these years, since April 24th, since I was a lowly priest in Cupertino, you know, yeah, Apple computers, before Apple computers, we used to do these strange things over there. We'd invite the Red Cross to come and take blood on April 24th to go to the community bank. Because in 1915, we gave blood against our will. Today, we're giving that blood willingly for the community. We did it in Cupertino when I got to Pasadena in 1996. We continued that tradition. We continued it when I went to Glendale, when I served as the priest there. We continued it at the Western Diocese. We did it. But these last couple of years, they're not doing it. They're not doing it. I kind of backed off from being the person doing it, and they're not doing it. Nobody's talking about it even. But what they are talking about is on woe is us. Look at us. 110 years and these things have happened to us, and there's nobody who cares for us. Well, it's a two-way street. You know, it's like somebody you run into and they say, where have you been? You never call me. Well, you know, the phone works both ways. You never call me. I mean, you know, you gotta play. You want to play together. You got to call me. I got to call you. That's part of life. But this expectation that somehow these things are going to get done. Because look at us, we're a pitiful group of people, and we need attention. And I see this all along. I hear these Armenian scholars, quote unquote, scholars, because they read about the message of what went on in the Armenian history. Okay, all right, beautiful. And then at the end of the day, I'm just talking because I was listening. I was just got off of a seminar. And I got to tell you, honestly, it's fascinating. It's fascinating. But that information, I mean, stays there. It's just historical. It's a historical, it's history. But unless you could apply it into your life today, it doesn't become relevant. And one of the ways we apply it to our lives is by saying, look what's going on over there. And what am I doing to stop it from happening today? The Jews had an expression called never again. It'll never happen again. Armenians adopted it. And I heard it at different places. People getting up and talking. Never again will this happen. Okay, never again is a beautiful statement. I heard it last year when I went to UCLA and the USC students had come over because USC was under siege at their campus. They had Palestinian demonstrations or something going on over there, right? And so here they are, the Armenian students, and they're saying, never again. Okay, never again, but there is a genocide going on. Right now. So are you saying never again to us or never again genocide? Because there's a big difference. And this is what I mean about taking those steps backwards. The steps forward are inclusive. We need to start understanding ourselves as part of a world community where we have something to say and something to offer the rest of the world. That's what Epostle is about. That's what Epostle is all about. It's not that we just have this Armenian history that looks so beautiful, but we have a means by which the world can live, can survive, and can thrive. And the proof of that is the life experience of the Armenian people. Not only exist, survive, but thrived. And we can do that. We have something to offer the rest of the world. It's found in the faith that we have in Jesus Christ, which is a faith that starts at the empty tomb on Easter Sunday. And it's all connected. It's all connected. And so when I'm sitting here today feeling frustrated that we're not moving forward, we're taking steps backwards, it's for me as a challenge for all of us to start saying we need to find disciples for this message of resurrection. It's the message that we've been putting out for years, as in his shoes, walk in the shoes of others. It's the message that we've now put as centerpiece of apostle ministry, that if it is apostolic evangelism, that was the evangelism that the apostles, that was their mission. Get out there and talk about the resurrection. And in talking about the resurrection, it's not about Jesus resurrecting, but your ability to rise to the occasion. Let's stop blaming others and start taking that responsibility. I know. It's overwhelming. It's very difficult, especially on April 25th, to say, hey, I'm Armenian. But in that difficulty, we have to find those challenges. And those challenges, we are able to overcome them. Overcome them in the same way that Jesus overcame the tomb. The tomb is not an end. Death is not an end. That's the message that comes to us from the empty tomb, from Easter Sunday. It's the message that we need to make priority when we say evangelism. That's what we evangelize, the possibility of overcoming the tomb. Apostolic evangelism means from the time of the apostles, that has been the central message, that the tomb is not the end. Apostolic evangelism for an electronic universe. Well, the rest is the electronic universe. There's no going back. It's electronic as you want it, and we are connected. So let's use those connections and get this message out. Pope Francis, that was the topic of the second portion. I know that I'm going to be up late tonight watching the funeral from Rome. And our prayers are with our Catholic brothers as they start sifting through and figuring out where the church is going to be headed. There are many, many good discussions going on, and I invite people to get involved because in those discussions, you have an opportunity to question your faith and who you are. When I say discussions, I'm talking about Pope Francis and about the entire process of electing a new pope. Did you see Conclave? Did we ever talk about that? I don't think we've had a next step. We saw it about a couple months ago. Wow, what a great movie. Conclave. You know, I read the book several years ago. I forgot when it came out. And the title of the book kind of made me want to read it, Conclave. And seeing the movie was just beautiful. And I never, the twist at the end is fantastic. I think it was really, really fantastic. And they covered it in a nice way. In fact, I won't talk about it because I'm hoping that some of you haven't seen it. They tell me that it's on Netflix and it had the highest rating of all their movies this last Monday, the night that the Pope died. After he died, I guess people wanted to see what's the conclave about. And we need to pray that the Holy Spirit guide everyone as they select the next chief bishop of the Roman Catholic Church. Our sisters, our brothers. Yeah, that's right. I mean, he is the successor of St. Peter. Our Catholicos is the successor of St. Thaddeus. I mean, these were two guys that were at the table with our Lord Jesus. These were two guys who witnessed the resurrection and went out, one to Rome, one to Armenia, and preached the gospel to the people, telling them, do not be afraid. The grave is not the end. All right, but let's put an end for today's show. We'll talk more about this. I missed the next step so much, and you got to believe I want to do it more often, but we are doing daily shows, and that's where we get hung up. Here's Susie. I'll be back in a moment, okay?
Before getting back to the next step with Father Vazgen, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. The next step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the next step with Father Vazgen.
Okay, there you have it. If Susie says it, it must be true. Thank you, Susie, and thank you all of you for all of your love and support. I want to steer you to epostle.net. Meet us there every single day. There are daily messages, podcasts coming out. Gregory Baylarian moving from visual artistic landscapes, artistic decoration to poetic. Yeah, he's doing some great stuff. Susanna Bogosian, wow. Incredible, incredible. Her podcasts are out there. You got to listen to them. And the latest one, oh, she had a good guest. Anyway, Archbishop Popenon is doing Coffee with the Sorpas on every morning. We have those for you, too. And we're going to be having some new written stuff coming up within the next week. All of this is in our newsletter. And if you don't get our newsletter, go to epostle.net. Sign up for that newsletter because it'll keep you in the loop with all that's going on. Well, that does it for our show today. Please join us daily because these topics that we talk about here on The Next Step are covered throughout the week. And we hope that, you know, you take this message and share it with others. So on behalf of the wonderful team that put today's show together, my producer Susie and myself, this is Father Vasco, inviting you to join us again next time as we take the next step.
Stand by for disclaimer.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Epostle.net. Apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe.
Forgot to ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are. Bye.